Good morning, Colorado. You're listening to the Daily Sun Up with the Colorado Sun. It's Monday, November 28th. Today, we're visiting with Colorado Sun outdoors reporter Jason Blevins about his discovery regarding an unusual warning the National Park Service issued about toads. We'll also touch on the record amount of sales tax collected in mountain towns this year. Before we begin, we'd like to thank our friends and sponsors at Xcel Energy. Xcel Energy can help you find ways to keep your home or business running smoothly while reducing energy use and saving you money. Find everyday tips for using less energy and simple ways to manage your energy budget at xcelenergy.com. Now, let's go back in time with some Colorado history. On this date, after months of intransigence, Arthur Collins, a manager at the Smuggler Union Mine near Telluride, signed a deal with members of the Western Federation of Miners Labor Union. Conceding to the demands of a bitter, deadly strike earlier that year, Collins sought to restore peace and profit alike. Tension built among gold and silver miners near Telluride in the spring of 1901 over new pay rates announced by mine owners that resulted in dramatically lower wages. The labor union, which had struck with success at Cripple Creek and with failure at Leadville, called out its members. A month later, Collins imported non-unionized workers to reopen the smuggler union, leading to friction between the outsiders and the picketing miners. To make matters worse, Collins hired the replacements under the old better pay system rather than his new one, adding insult to injury. Strikers clashed with the imported workers on July 3rd in a gun battle that lasted through the morning, killing 4 men and wounding 6. The strikers then rounded up 88 company workers and marched them at gunpoint over the San Juan Mountains with admonitions never to return on pain of death. Governor James Orman considered ordering the Colorado National Guard to the strike zone, but 3 days after the clash, Collins and the union settled the dispute and work at the smuggler union resumed. Many of the recently evicted replacement laborers returned to Telluride and worked peacefully alongside union members. Collins and the union agreed the following November to restore the old pay rate, and the crisis dissipated. Nevertheless, 1 year later, a gunshot fired through a window killed Collins as he played cards with friends at his home near the mine. His murder remains unsolved. Before we continue, a quick message. The Colorado Sun invites you to attend Closing the Gap, a conversation with Colorado's Black community about home ownership. Join the virtual discussion to hear from expert panels about getting the Black community to a place where they have better access to home ownership. The event is free, will be streamed and recorded on December 1st from 5:30 to 6:45 p.m. Learn more at coloradosun.com/events. Next, our feature story.
Welcome back to the Daily Sun Up Podcast, Colorado. I'm Carol Wood, guiding you through today's conversation, and I'm grateful to be here with all of you and with Jason Blevins, our outdoor reporter. Hey, Jason.
Hey, Carol.
Thanks for stopping by. Couple things I wanted to get you to expand on today, and I think this is probably one of the most unusual stories. I don't know, maybe not that you've written, but that I've read. And this has to do with folks licking or not licking hallucinogenic toads and some records requests that you did. Take us away.
Okay. On Halloween, the National Park Service made a post on Facebook on their official account there, pleading with visitors to their national park properties to refrain from licking the large Sonoran desert toads that are kind of common in the Southwest. It was smarmy, but it sort of was the idea that, you know, no one asked for this, but here we are, is kind of what the National Park Service did. So I saw that and it went everywhere. Probably the most viral post the National Park Service has ever had.
Yes, I saw it on a lot of my platforms also.
Tens of thousands of news outlets picked up this story, just sort of poking fun, even internationally, that the Park Service was apparently a swarm with people trying to, I don't know, lick these Sonoran desert toads.
Even Stephen Colbert, I think, referenced it.
Yes, he did.
He on his late show monologue.
Quite a joke. Everybody thought it was the funniest thing ever. So I thought, you know, hey, let me call up the National Park Service, gave them a Freedom of Information Act to check. They have this database that's called the Incident Management Analysis and Reporting System. And I asked them to survey that system, and, you know, give me all the records they have of, you know, any human interaction with these toads. You know, thinking, well, certainly if they were felt compelled to give a warning to everybody to not go out and lick the toads, maybe we should hear some of these stories of incidents with rangers maybe running into these folks.
Right. You did what reporters do, or what you know, what you do. Yeah.
You would think. And then Park Service got back to me and said, well, actually, there are no reports, zero reports of humans having any interaction with these desert toads. I think I surveyed 18 different properties down in the Southwest that would be part of or inside or adjacent to the Sonoran Desert Toad terrain or their habitat. And they basically said it was just kind of a joke intended to convey a general message of not messing with wildlife that you come across in the park.
Interesting.
Yeah, kind of fair enough. These toads are, they're not endangered or anything, and they're very large. And apparently when you you can get these toads and milk the toxins in the glands they have behind their ears or on their necks there, and dry those and smoke them for a psychoactive substance in there. But it doesn't work, apparently, if you just go lick them. And I don't think people are going out there and licking them. Kind of an interesting little update. We'll see if our story, we had it in, you know, Colorado Sun and in the newsletter, and we'll see if it can come in even remotely close to clawing back the tsunami of news reports that were out there that apparently the Southwest is awash with people licking toads.
Yeah, and I wonder why they picked, did you get an explanation in your reporting as to why, you know, they picked this particular, I guess, demonstration of let's not mess with wildlife? Because, you know, are people just not listening to don't walk up to a buffalo, or, you know, don't feed a bear? So is don't lick a toad just a new way of doing that messaging?
Yeah, I guess so. I don't know why you would make something up, though. That was sort of unusual. It seems like maybe it would injure your legitimacy if you start making stuff up. But when they talk about not getting too close to the buffalo in Yellowstone, or, you know, leaving your food out, there's pictures of bears breaking into cars and pictures of these buffaloes charging people. So that is very warranted warnings. Like, we have video evidence that we need to be warned, apparently, for this stuff. But that's what sort of prodded me. I'm like, well, let's get some documentation and see if we can share with the readers some of the dangers of, one, these toads, and two, the apparently visitors who are going around that I don't know what they're doing to the toads, but it's just odd to make it up. That was sort of my idea.
It is. Did you get any official explanation about that? Or
no, they did not want to give that. But doesn't seem like you would want to, if you had a real issue, you would want to maybe back it up and have warnings that certainly maybe we shouldn't be making up scenarios in order to make up funny warnings. Maybe people stop listening to your warnings if you do that.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, if people want to read this story, they, of course, like you said, can go to coloradosun.com. Or if they want to get stories like this in their inbox before anybody else does, they can subscribe to your Outsider newsletter that comes out every Thursday. You can sign up for that at coloradosun.com. The other thing that we can visit about if you've still got some time is record spending in Colorado mountain towns this year so far in 2022. The taxable spending, sales tax tracking that you've done. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so I have a running database for the past many years that I just sort of log in monthly reports from 18 Colorado mountain communities and just kind of track their net taxable sales, what's going on there with people spending, visitor spending. This is the net taxable sales. So this is local shopping in the grocery store. This is, you know, tourists, you know, buying lift tickets and rafting trips. And it's also residents shopping online, thanks to a Supreme Court Wayfair decision that has enabled these local communities to collect sales tax on online sales, you know, done over the computer there in these communities. So I've been watching this, and we've had a pretty steady climb in the past couple of years. I break it down into summer and winter seasons. And so last winter, 21-22, we saw a record spending with a 55% increase over the pre-pandemic 1920, so the winter season. So there's, you know, people are, they're spending more, and they, you know, and hoteliers, and as we all know, if we've been up at the mountain communities, prices are up. Lodge keepers are charging kind of record high rates for their rooms. We're all shopping on the Amazon and shopping online, so there's that. And then there's just, you know, more folks spending. So more tourists come in, spending more. So this is all translating into pretty incredible tax revenues on the ground in these local communities. And now, if you tie in, which we wrote about a week before, you know, these new short-term rental taxes that are going to be coming online for a lot of these communities. And another story we wrote recently, the real estate transfer tax in a handful of these communities. These are all at all-time highs. So these tax collections have never been higher. Combine all that with a bunch of money coming in from the feds and the state for affordable housing. And we are seeing sort of a once in a generation kind of flood of cash for these, for mountain communities, especially on the Western Slope. How these communities are going to use this money, how they're going to spend this money, if we are on the cusp of a recession and we're about to go into a dark time, are these communities going to start banking a little money so they can kind of weather a cold winter of 2-3 years of, you know, maybe a downturn. So it's interesting to watch. But when you look at all these tax collections that are coming into these mountain communities and all the spending that's happening, this is a rare confluence of and bountiful tax collections that's happening right now.
It is. And if our listeners kind of want to get a visual for that, you and our presentation team put together this really demonstrative flourish chart of those 18 mountain communities, you know, from May to August, like you said, 2019, 2020, 2021, and now 2022, and how the bar extends for 2022 past, really surpasses those other 3 years. And you've got on here the 18 mountain communities, you know, alphabetically from Aspen to Winter Park. And, you know, I think like you said, what will this bounty be used for? You know, we have a lot of issues in our mountain communities. We have transportation, we have housing issues, you know, all kinds of just general infrastructure. Or is it best used for put away for a rainy day, which, you know, how far away might a rainy day be for some of these communities?
Yep. It's a pretty interesting time, but, you know, it's also sort of a good problem to have, right?
It is. And you also note in the story, total taxable spending in these 18 communities between May and August of 2022 of this year is $2.7 billion. And just a couple years ago, that number was $2 billion. And so that's a significant jump.
I know. You're seeing, you know, 20 to 25% jumps in these tax collections in the past 2-3 years, which is significant. That's quite amazing. You know, especially when you kind of look at where we were in 2020, kind of uncertainty with the pandemic and what's this going to look like. And now, you know, as we're sort of putting that in the rear view, we're starting to see, you know, these tax collections just an astronomical amount. So hopefully these communities play it smart. It'd be interesting to see how they all kind of adapt and what they can do with this kind of once in a lifetime bump in taxes.
Right. And to your point, 2020 was the year with, out of these last four, the year with the smallest, the least amount of sales tax collection. And then, you know, 2022, it just balloons. Again, if people want to see that chart, they can go to your story on record spending in Colorado mountain towns last summer. They can look at the chart, read the data. And I can't wait to, you know, see how this plays out and how what they do with this money in those towns. I know that you track it. We appreciate that. And also appreciate you taking time to break that down today, as well as the toads. So Jason, thanks for stopping by. And thanks to everybody who listens to the Daily Sunup podcast. If you have questions or comments, drop us an email at podcast@coloradosun.com. And thanks to everybody else who helped produce today's podcast, including our production partners, Pirate Audio. Have a wonderful day out there. And I sincerely hope you can join us for the next Daily Sun Up.
You can read more at coloradosun.com. Finally, here are a few stories that you should know about today. The stories of the Native American tribes whose people were killed at the Sand Creek Massacre are the focus of History Colorado's latest exhibit on the 1864 attack on the Cheyenne and Arapaho camp. The museum closed the 2012 exhibit soon after it opened because of harsh criticism it did not include the stories of those murdered. In an effort to fix that mistake, History Colorado staff spent the past 10 years partnering with the sovereign nations to produce the new exhibit. It now gives voice to the people still suffering intergenerational trauma from the attack on a peaceful encampment that killed more than 230 inhabitants. Many of Colorado's foster children are not being screened for mental health problems as quickly as they should be. According to data recently received by state lawmakers, figures show fewer than a third of children in foster care receive behavioral health screening within a month of enrolling in the state's Medicaid insurance program. That's despite well-documented concerns about the prevalence of trauma and mental health issues among foster kids and those adopted from the foster care system. Lawmakers said they are concerned about the lag in care and other issues raised in a Colorado Sun investigation about broken adoptions. Jerry Carroll is finally enjoying an old baseball card collection he left in a Crested Butte bank safe deposit box decades ago. Carroll was able to track down the collection, which includes a card from 1912 when he connected with the Colorado Treasury's Unclaimed Property Department. The agency has roughly 10,000 items in a vault at the state capitol, and with a little work, Carroll was able to find the cards. Coloradans can check colorado.findyourunclaimedproperty.com to see if any of their property or cash has been turned over to the state. For more information on all these stories, visit our website, www.coloradosun.com. And don't forget to tune in again on Monday. Now, a quick message from our editor.
I'm Larry Rickman, editor and co-founder of the Colorado Sun. The Sun is a public benefit corporation, and we rely on the support of listeners and readers like you to produce the nonpartisan, in-depth news that Colorado needs and deserves. Please consider becoming a Sun member for just $5 a month. Learn more at coloradosun.com. Thanks.